Hello. My name's Tamer Malati. I am a licensed professional counselor, and I work with adolescents and young adults in the Houston area. My wife Rina and I, we are a part of St. Mark's Church. I grew up in Houston, and I'm sure my parents have been in Houston now for, oh, really? Now this is official. My parents came to Houston back in the late 70s, and we've lived here ever since. I like to go to Egypt often. I've visited back home every year since I was about 10 years old. So I love Egypt. I even met Rina in Egypt about 4 or 5 years ago. But anyway, just to give you guys a little information, this presentation isn't meant to scare you guys. It's not, you know, I don't want you to, you know, look at this and feel like you have to live in fear of the things that your kids are being exposed to. This is more or less supposed to serve as an educational piece. Just in case you guys don't know what's going on out there, it'll give you some information. How many of you guys grew up in Egypt? Okay. So he didn't raise his hand over there, though. That's okay. I didn't either. But things here are a lot different than they are in Egypt. And, you know, I think it's important that we notice that and we notice what the differences are. And it's also important to stay up to date because even from the time I grew up to now, this generation is flooded with so much more information, you know, whether it's through the media, whether it's through social media, whether it's through TV, than I ever was. So, so there's three kind of things that I talk about as far as what your kids are being exposed to. And the three things are video games, pornography, and drugs and alcohol. So again, don't be scared. So this first slide, can y'all see okay? Okay, good. So a lot of you guys probably recognize a lot of the symbols that are on this screen, right? Probably notice the Facebook, the YouTube, Instagram. How many of you guys use Twitter? How many of you guys know anything about Twitter? Twitter, amongst the youth today, is one of... Twitter and Instagram now are the most popular. I found this out through one of my old students at the high school I was working at, is Facebook is for old people. I thought I was cool using Facebook, but apparently young people don't use Facebook anymore. They use Twitter and they use Instagram. What are some of the things we notice about Facebook and Instagram that make us feel a little bit safe? For me, it's censored. You know, I know if I go on there or if one of my students is going on there, there's no nudity. There's no, there is violence, but it's, you know, for the most part, they censor Facebook. Twitter, which is used by a lot of our youth and even adults, Twitter is not censored. I don't know if any of you guys knew that, but you can go on Twitter and you can search anything you want. And whether it's, you know, pictures, whether it's videos, whether it's these ISIS things that are coming, you know, these videos that are coming out showing people being beheaded. Twitter is totally not censored. And, you know, so if you don't know how Twitter works, I would go ahead and find out. You know, and today they have other things like Google Plus and Flickr and Pinterest. You know, if you don't know these things, I'm not asking you to create an account and go become an expert and do all this, but you know, these are the types of things that our kids are being exposed to that sometimes we don't really know. We don't know what's out there. And I gear this more towards teenagers because that's the demographics that I work with a lot. And it says, this is how much time per hour that our teens are spending per day being exposed to things. And I feel like they're pretty on point here. So the average teenager, and this is between 8 and 18-year-olds, spend over 6 hours a day being exposed to media. These are averages, okay? But 6 hours, I would say probably a lot of us are too, whether it's, you know, the billboards we see out, you know, on the streets, whether it's the Facebook ads we see, whether it's commercials, even nowadays on video games. Video games are filled with ads now, or the iPhone games that we play. It's media all day. But look at it in contrast to homework and chores. Homework, chores, and physical activity, all three of them together don't combine to how much time we're exposed to the media. Even I would probably say even including with parents. And that's a concern. You know, I think the next time you go out as a family to a public place, like you go to a restaurant or you go, you know, you guys go to a cafe or something, I want you to look around you and I want you to pay attention to all the people that are on their phones, the people that aren't connecting with each other, you know, or, you know, the kids who are sitting off in the corner, you know, watching something on their iPad and not being connected with families and the friends around them. It's so glaring when you're out in public, and you will start to notice it. So I want to kind of paint a little picture about the difference in the media exposure between a place like Egypt and a place like America. I'm sure you guys are looking at this and it's kind of taking you back a little to the billboards in Egypt. They're great. You know, Coca-Cola, Sprite, you know, it's pretty clear what they're advertising here, right? A big Sprite bottle, you know, on the billboard, or a big Coca-Cola sign. Nothing too provocative or anything. And then I want you to take a look at in America, what our advertisements are. You know, look at the one in the top middle, right? We see a man and a woman engaging in, you know, looks like they're about to engage in some sort of sexual activity. We look at those tiny little bottles they're holding. And they want to tell me that whole picture tells me that they're just selling an alcoholic beverage. The Coca-Cola sign. You know, you got a Coca-Cola bottle, but what makes the ad so, you know, you want to look again? It's the sex. Sex is what sells in America. If you look at the bottom left, this is a billboard in a city. It was a site called Ashley Madison. Have you guys heard about Ashley Madison? Okay. Ashley Madison was a website. I don't know, you probably heard about it in the news when it got hacked. But it was a website kind of like Match.com for married people. For married people to find other married people so that they can cheat on their spouses. This bottom right billboard. This is an actual billboard on a highway that says, sex. Now that we have your attention, eat at Subway. What? does that have to do with sandwiches? Nothing. But you'll probably read it. A lot of people will probably read. I mean, and that alone, that is just a small thing. I mean, billboards are a very small piece of, you know, our daily life. But we see them and we recognize them. And our kids see them too. And then, you know, nowadays, I guess this is probably in the last 10 years since the smartphone came out. And, you know, nowadays, our teens, I mean, how old do our kids before they get cell phones now? 11, 12, 13, they get their own cell phone. You know, today, our teens are always connected to the internet. And it says, how often, you know, it says, one in four teens are online almost constantly. That's a quarter of our kids. And I think now with this Pokemon Go, they're connected 24 hours a day. but 56% of our teens are getting online several times a day. It's so easy. How many times do we get on our phone to, I guess if we're sitting in a waiting room, sitting in our office, sitting anywhere, do we check our Facebook on our phone? I'd say probably at least 10 times a day. That's probably an average. Or to get on YouTube, or less than 1% of teens today are online for 1%. I mean, once a week. That shows you how, you know, and I would venture to say that, you know, maybe when I was a teenager, you know, when internet was at home, people usually only had one computer, that this graph would probably be opposite. But nowadays, it's we are constantly connected, which means we're constantly being exposed. So now we're going to get into video games. How many of you or your kids play video games regularly? Okay, we got one. This includes iPhone games. iPhone games are games, by the way. I'm a Candy Crush addict, I'm not going to lie. you can ask my wife. It says right here, over 120 million people play video or computer games in the U.S. How big is the U.S.? What is it, like 300, 600 million people? That's a pretty big percentage here. And now with all the advertisements and all, you know, if you got on a video game recently, now there's soundtracks to them, there's commercials, there's all kinds of advertisements. And video games now have surpassed our movies and box office numbers, which seems kind of crazy because movies come out every week. You know, I think it's a little bit more rare that video games come out. 92% of 12 to 17 year olds are playing video games. And they can play them at school, they can play them in between classes. I think the popular games now are like the Grand Theft Auto, and then of course all the sporting games like FIFA and Madden, and the Call of Duties. How many of you guys have heard of Call of Duty? Call of Duty, very famous game. It's a shooting game where you go around and you're kind of like the army person and you're going around and you're trying to kill someone. And this one, it says, an estimated 72% of American households have a video game console. If we include our phones, I'd probably say that's closer to 100%. These next two are very, they're pretty shocking. It says in 2004, and this was before, I guess it was right before the iPhone, and it was right before the smartphone boom, the in-game advertising generated $34 million in 2004. By 2016, it grew to $7.2 billion. I mean, that's an insane increase in growth. These are just a few images. I want you to look at these images of what's going on in these video games. If you don't know what's going on in these video games, I think you can go on YouTube and kind of look at what in-game play looks like. It's actually quite shocking. So if you look at the bottom left, I'm facing y'all. Yes, bottom left. This is a game called Grand Theft Auto. Literally, the point of Grand Theft Auto is for you to kill, steal, shoot people in the city to try to, I guess, achieve certain objectives. But it's all centered around shooting. It's all centered around, degrading women. If you listen to the in-game play, the language is very foul. And this image, this is the image of the guy in the game stealing a car. With all the mass shootings that we've had in America, you look at this top right screen. If you sit and watch a kid playing a video game, whether it's on an iPad or whether it's in front of a TV, they get really sucked into these games. You feel like they could sit there for days and play. They don't look to their left or right. They don't say they're hungry. They will just sit there and play their hearts out. I would say one of the signs of video game addiction is playing a video game for more than 3 hours per sitting. I think 3 hours is an excessive amount of time without a break. I don't even work for 3 hours without taking a break. So if I'm playing video games for 3 hours without taking a break, then there's a sign that I might be a little out of control. Passing up activities that are normally enjoyed. And you definitely see this within the high school communities or even, preteens, maybe the 10 to 13 age. Those kids that are, it looks like on Friday nights there's big activities here. And, the kids who have normally enjoyed coming to church or going to football games for their high school or playing sports, they all of a sudden start to lose interest in those things, and all they want to do is either go out with their friends and play video games at home. They start to lose interest in the things that that they once enjoyed. Neglecting work to play games, and this is more along the lines of homework. I think a lot of kids can fall into this, but and then the getting restless or irritable if you can't play the game. If you have little kids or even teens, I want you to try and abruptly just end the game and see what happens. It's kind of entertaining, but they get really angry when you do it, and it's because they're so sucked in. And there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the brain, and we'll go through that a little bit later. But, just to give you some insight, nowadays, these video game developers are a lot more scientific than they were, I guess, when I grew up with video games. I mean, we had these two-dimensional games, Mario Brothers. It was, now you play that game for 30 minutes and you're just done. But these kids can stay, these video game developers now, when they're testing these games, they'll hook people up to kind of like, they'll monitor people's brain activities, and they can sense when these people that are playing the game are experiencing you know, pleasure during the video game. And what they do is they fill this game. They fill all these games with, you know, we're going to fill the game with that. You know, whether it's the killing, whether it's the stealing, you know, and can y'all hear me? Okay. And that's a lot different than it was, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when games were being developed. And that's why kids are being able to stay and play for so long, is because they're constantly being stimulated. And then the third, you know, the last one is, the last sign would be, is when we try to limit their gameplay, or say, you can play after you finish your homework, or you can play after we eat dinner, and then you find that you're being unsuccessful in that. You know, you realize that maybe they're sneaking to play the game, they haven't actually finished their homework and they're playing, or you know, or they'll give you a hard time. Okay. Now I want to go on. This is a very uncomfortable subject. It's a subject that, you know, especially in the church, we don't like to talk about. It's not a subject that, you know, there's a lot of shame associated with pornography. And it's overall just an uncomfortable topic to bring up. But you have to know that your kids, us included too, we are exposed to this type of, you know, these types of things at all times. Okay. I want you to listen to this first statistic, and it says, according to sources, in the U.S., pornography revenues exceed the combined revenues of ABC, CBS, and NBC. Combined. Those are like the free channels that everyone watches. And these are the channels the Super Bowl is on. I mean, $6.2 billion just from the industry of pornography. It's larger than all combined revenues of all of our professional football, baseball, and basketball franchises. Those are huge organizations. And it's, I mean, it's baffling. I couldn't believe it when I read these statistics. And then it says here, the pornography industry, according, and these are conservative estimates, brings in roughly $57 billion per year. And the U.S. alone is responsible for $12 billion. So think about that. One country is almost responsible for 20% of the entire world's pornography industry. And then this is one of the most shocking ones, is the largest consumer of it are our 12 to 17 year old age group. And to me, that's the scariest fact, is that these aren't adults that are viewing it. These are our kids that are viewing it, the 12 to 17 year old age group. And nowadays it's even easier, because we're just connected. You know, you could go on your phone right now, and, you know, a kid could be at school, and he can look up pictures, videos, whatever. And these industries make so much money that they know how to target these kids. Like, you ever notice on Facebook how you'll get an ad, and you're like, oh, my God, you don't understand, like, you were on Amazon, you know, a day ago, and you were looking at something, and then on Facebook you get an ad about it. It's like, how do they know what I'm looking at? They know you. They know us better than we know ourselves. And the porn industry knows who it's targeting. And so our kids are being targeted. And sometimes we don't know it. So what pops up on their feed might be different than what pops up on your feed. And so, And then in these video games, the way they portray women, you know, it's... And here, I'll read you some statistics. It says 93% of boys and 62% of girls are exposed to internet porn before the age of 18. How many of y'all think that number for girls is actually high? I did, because I've always associated pornography addiction and people who view pornography to be boys and men. But this right here is telling me that more than half of the girls have been exposed to it by the age of 18. And then it says, and these are, I guess, before the age of 18, it says 70% of boys have spent more than 30 consecutive minutes looking at online porn at least on one occasion. You know, that is... And sometimes we can kind of have that mentality that are like, well, my kid's not doing it, or not in this community. Yes, in this community, it happens. And, you know, but we want to kind of shut ourselves off and think that we're kind of sometimes the exception, you know. And I think we're all guilty of doing that sometimes. And it says here, 35% of boys have done this on more than 10 occasions. And these are just kind of some more statistics. And if you go online, you will find all kinds of statistics about the pornography industry. And, you know, and like I said earlier, this presentation isn't meant to scare you guys. It's not meant for you to, like, go home and lock the door, homeschool your kids, and, you know, throw away the TVs and computers. It's really just meant to educate you on what is out there. So I don't want you guys to be afraid. Why is pornography so appealing to our kids? Curiosity. You know, kids, teenagers, when they go through puberty, they start, you know, they kind of get to that age where they start to look at the opposite sex. They get curious. You know, a lot of times we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to, you know, like, you're too young. We don't want to engage with them. But, you know, eventually they find themselves stumbling across, whether it's a commercial, whether it's a website, and then they get curious. And what happens in these videos, they see a lot of pleasure. They see the excitement. You know, they look at all the good aspects of, you know, what sex can be. And then, you know, you look at every commercial, every ad, every, you know, pretty much when we portray women in the media, what do we see? They are, you know, what we're supposed to believe are perfect bodies. You know, they're, you know, no one's over 100 pounds. They're all size zeros. It's like, you know, and then we wonder why our little girls are growing up with body image complexes, because the media tells us this is what sexy is. You know, and, you know, so these boys see that, and they get curious. And nowadays, you can go on a pornography website, and you can find all kinds of different genres. And so there's this variety. And teenagers, especially, are very curious people. We think little kids are curious. Teenagers are way more curious, just in a different kind of way. And then this one is, that's really important, is it's an escape for some teenagers, you know. Adolescence can be a very lonely, awkward phase in some people's lives. For some people, it's, you know, it's fun, they have a great time, but for a lot of people, it's lonely, it's awkward. It's the age when, you know, we're going to high school and changing our you know, we change friends. We, you know, it's an escape. It's an escape for people, especially loneliness. Okay. So these are some symptoms of, you know, someone who has a bad porn habit. And, you know, obviously I don't want you to see someone who's depressed and you'd be like, okay, you know, are you addicted to porn? No, that's not it at all. But, you know, you look at people with emotional numbness. Now, the reason I put that on there, emotional numbness, is, you know, when you're talking about intimacy, you know, intimacy isn't all about the act. And what pornography takes away from the act of sex is the intimacy. So, you know, you look at, you know, people who only watch pornography, you know, and then they go and do it in the real life. They've kind of, they haven't learned how to connect with the intimacy. They think that, intimacy is what they see on the internet. So it's that emotional numbness to sex. Depression, irritability, someone who has a difficulty concentrating. And, you know, these are all just symptoms. But it's, I think it'd be good to, you know, to keep these in your mind if you know that someone's struggling or you think that someone is struggling, to ask for help. Okay, now this right here is, this is my specialty, I know, but drugs, especially in the Houston area, it's a very prevalent, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's very prevalent in our communities. And it has started to become more and more prevalent. Luckily for us, Houston has one of the greatest support systems in our cities, whether it's through drug abuse programs, whether it's through just youth groups. Being in the field, we are light years away from any other city in the United States. In fact, they are in the process of releasing a documentary about drug addiction recovery programs in the Houston area. And they just did their first screening in Houston, I think, on Wednesday. But we have a big problem in Houston, and I attribute it to a couple of things. One, how big and diverse our city is. And two, you know, Houston is a great city, but sometimes we lack in activities, whether it's outdoors, whether it's the beach, whether, you know, we're a very suburban area. So I think those things kind of factor into it. So illicit drug use, and these are drugs from marijuana to heroin. It says, in the past year, the use of illicit drugs for all grades, and this is from 7th to 12th grade, was about 27.2%, at least one use. It says here, 16.6% of 10th graders reported using marijuana in the past 30 days. Now that seems like a kind of like a small number, but that's about 1 in 6, right? 1 in 6 kids have reported using marijuana in the past 30 days. I think that's pretty high. And 21.2% of 12th graders have reported using marijuana in the last 30 days. That's 1 in 5. It says here, almost 10% of 12th graders reported some abuse of prescription drugs in the last 12 months. And prescription drugs have become kind of a bigger phenomenon since about, I guess, right about 9/11. That's when the prescription drug boom happened. Before that, it was a lot of street drugs. And I'll tell you, this doesn't include alcohol. Alcohol is a whole nother different thing, you know, a whole bunch of different other statistics. And we all know that in Texas, you know, Texans, they like to drink. We look here, for the most part, the trend is still kind of the same. Marijuana is the overwhelming, drug of choice amongst our teenagers. But now you're looking at, you know, pain relievers, whether those are prescription or over-the-counter. But you look at, you know, one of the good things is you look at heroin and cocaine rates and some of the other ones, they've gone significantly down. Cocaine, back in the 90s and early 2000s was a big deal. And, I mean, I was too young, but I'm assuming in the 80s was huge with ecstasy and cocaine. And now they've kind of been eliminated. But I want you to look at the percentage, the highest percentage of people that are our drug users today. So you look here, you get a huge spike right here about the 18, and then it kind of stays high and tapers off right around, you know, starts to go down around the 26 age. And those are really when our kids are going off to college, starting their careers. And what do we know about teenagers is teenagers love excitement. And, you look at commercials today, like you look at an alcohol commercial, right? What are they trying to portray to us? That if you drink this alcohol, you will go to a party with amazingly good-looking women, and you will have the time of your life, and, you know, that's what they show us. Like, if you pick this up, this is what will happen to you. But they don't show the other side of, you know, how high of a percentage of, you know, domestic abuse cases, how many of them is alcohol involved in. They'll never tell you that kind of stuff because that's not going to sell their product. But when you talk about targeting the 18 to 25 year old range, those people see that and they're like, yes, I need this. This is the newest trend. How many of you guys have heard about the new synthetic drugs that have kind of hit the market over the last 5 to 7 years? Anybody? Okay. I saw one hand. So, the synthetic drug craze that started to happen is these companies that are developing these new drugs in labs, and their intention is to mimic the effects of the actual drugs. So, you know, whereas marijuana kind of grows, it's from the earth, it's, you know, plant-based, they have now gone into a lab and created a chemical compound to mimic the effects of marijuana. The scary part about this is, A, we don't know what's in these things. B, they're legal. So you ask yourself, well, where are these things sold? I would venture to say, I'm not from this area, but I would venture to say you could drive less than 5 minutes from this location right here and find some sort of synthetic drug. They're sold at gas stations. They're sold at, smoke shops, those smoke shops that you see all over the streets. And this is basically what I was telling you earlier about what the synthetic drug does. They're so powerful that some of these drugs have been known to cause psychosis, you know, show signs of psychosis after one use. One use. There was a few stories in Miami with with a substance called bath salts, where one guy had a psychotic episode and ate the face off of his roommate. I'm not making this up. He literally ate the face off of his roommate. His roommate was alive, but it's a scary thing that this is what our kids are being exposed to. And what's even scarier about it is that we can't drug test for it. So we're, you know, if I was working with a client and I said, you know, and he was smoking marijuana, I could test for that. If he's drinking alcohol, I can test for that. There are no tests for these things. And when the FDA or the government comes to regulate these products or say, you know, this has now become illegal, all they have to do is go in the lab, you know, tweak one little chemical, and it's back out in the market. So they're kind of at a disadvantage, the government, because they're always one step ahead of us. And it says here, and this is back in 2011, but, you know, I bet if I look at the statistics, these numbers will probably have doubled or tripled. It says 11.4% of 12th graders have used, and Spice or K2 are names of some of the synthetic drugs. And I would venture to say that's now in the 20 to 25% range. But what makes drugs so appealing to us is, or why do we crave it, or why do people get hooked on it? You know, there's something in our brain that gets released when we experience, you know, that allows us to experience pleasure, and that is called dopamine. So for example, how many of us get angry or irritable when we're hungry? I do. My wife hates me when I'm hungry. I'm not a very pleasant person to be around. But when I eat, after I eat, I'm very relaxed. Sometimes I even want to take a nap. And what happens is I eat, I get that dopamine release, and I feel happy, and I feel relaxed. And that's a normal release of dopamine in my brain. So the types of things that we get dopamine releases from are, you know, eating, thirst, sex, and then there's other things like drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, video games, and the scary part is when we do drugs, if you look at this very right slide, or these two slides at the end here, is when I eat food, I get a normal release of the amount of dopamine in my body. When I do something like drugs, my brain gets flooded with this dopamine, and I feel excess pleasure. The problem is if I go that high, I gotta come down, and when I want to feel that pleasure again, I'm gonna have to take more of that substance. I start to develop what they call a tolerance. And so my body says, I wanna be happy, and I need, this is what makes me happy. Hold on, can I go back? So what we know, I think this might be a little out of order, sorry. Sorry. I'm almost done here, so. But what we know here is in teenagers from the age of about 12 to 25, there's a massive amount of development that goes on in this area of the brain, which is kind of the prefrontal cortex area. That area of our brain is what we use for what we call executive functioning, whether it's decision making, whether making good decisions, just, you know, whenever we think about what the difference between adults, you know, why teenagers aren't able to make good decisions and we are, it's because there's that massive amount of development that's going on, and they haven't learned yet. And I want you to look at, this is kind of a picture of a brain taken from the top. And so the picture on the left is a fully functioning brain, right? And the picture on the right is a brain of someone who's under the influence of alcohol. So if you look at this area right here, this right here is that prefrontal cortex area. If you look at the picture on the right, when I've been drunk, that area of my brain shuts off. That's why you see people who are drunk, you know, when my brain is fully functioning, I would never think about driving drunk. I would never think about, you know, hurting someone. You kind of put alcohol in the picture, you know, some of those things go out the window. My executive functioning isn't where it's used to being at. So you ask someone, you know, when I talk about domestic abuse and you know, the high percentage of, you know, domestic abuse cases, there's alcohol involved. If you pulled about 10 guys and said, would you ever hit a woman, they'd probably say never. But you put alcohol in the picture, and that prefrontal cortex shuts off. It's and the scary part about that is when it's shut off in a 12 to a 25-year-old, it's not developing. And so what happens is, you know, if a teenager is using drugs consistently, they, you know, there's such a rapid amount of growth going on that if they continue using past the age of 25, developmentally, they will not be the same, whether it's emotionally, as people that are normally their age. So if you know someone who has gotten off of drugs at the age of 18 and they started when they were 14, you might look at that 18-year-old and be like, wow, that kid's very immature. He might not act as, he doesn't act his age. Well, that's a term that we call arrested development, where his social kind of growth was stunted because of his early onset of drug use. So now his brain is kind of playing catch up to play developmentally. But if he stays clean until he's about 25, he should catch up by the time he's of age. So I found this graph very interesting. It's a it's what we call the mind gap. And because we always think, man, our teenagers are very smart. And they can be very manipulative sometimes. And, you know, when I started to become an adult, I thought I was too cool for teenagers to be able to kind of trick me, until I started working with them and I kind of became an adult. And I was like, man, they're really good. And so what this graph is showing me, if you look at this solid line here, you see that intellectually, kids kind of reach where they're going to be, or they peak right around 16 or 17. So intellectually, they're kind of there as adults. They can think abstractly. They can problem solve. They can make decisions. But psychosocially, whether it's how to deal with people, there's a lot of things. Relationships with the opposite sex, learning how to prioritize. Those are the things that younger, they don't excel at it till right around the age you see they kind of start to peak at 25. So 25 is kind of the age where the intellectual and the psychosocial, socially, they kind of meet. But that's why you'll hear the phrase a lot, you know, with teenagers is like, I wish they would just treat me like an adult. I wish, you know, my parents would leave me alone I want to, you know, you always hear this with kids that are in treatment, or they're like, I'm just going to live out on my own. Okay, well, they obviously have no idea what it takes to live on their own, but sure, go ahead. Go ahead and try. And I really love this quote, and I think this is a very true quote, and it says here that a teenager's brain, it says, has a well-developed accelerator, but a partly developed brake. So you look at teenagers, they're always go, 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 go. They want to be stimulated. But when it comes to slowing down, they're not usually the best at doing that. So when we look at symptoms of drug addiction, we look at peer groups. You know, if my kid was on the basketball team and now he's all of a sudden changing his peer group, how much time do I have? Okay. You know that they're associating with people that you guys don't approve of. You know, someone who's argumentative, stealing, you know that they're holding secrets. People that try to fly under the radar, avoid your attention, you know, they want to go unnoticed. And then, you know, a lot of teenagers don't have the best hygiene, but, you know, if your child was a clean freak his whole life and all of a sudden you see a decline in his hygiene, that should raise some alarms. And then the last but not least is the grades start falling. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to combat all of this. And, you know, you guys here, you know, with church, you guys have a lot of resources, especially for youth, whether it's through, you know, the kids playing in the gym, whether it's activities like these on Friday nights. And like I said, this is not meant to scare you guys. This is more to serve as an educational piece to kind of know what it is that is, you know, that our kids are being, you know, they are being attacked. And we have to do our due diligence to make sure that, you know, our kids know the difference. And, you know, the things that make a difference. Connections, connections with family, connections with friends, you know, knowing your kids' friends, knowing their parents, that's very important. You know, it's sometimes the kids are like, why don't you just trust me? Well, I do, you let them know I do trust you. But in a sense, you have to tell yourself, okay, since my kid doesn't have a fully developed brake, I'm going to be his brake until he becomes of age. And that's just the way you have to look at it sometimes, is I'm going to be my child's brake. And yeah, I guess that's really it.